This episode and all of our Sundance coverage is brought to you by Rode Microphones and My Rode Reel. The world's largest short film competition is back, bigger and better in 2017. Head to myrodereel.com to sign up now. Hey, I'm Liz Nord. Welcome to the No Film School podcast. Imagine starting your day in bed with a gorgeous lover and ending it in the middle of a nightclub shooting. Or being face-to-face with an NSA whistleblower who's spilling deadly secrets. Or dancing through a lifetime of relationships until you become elderly and meet a dramatic end, or perhaps a new beginning. These are scenes from virtual reality projects, and they're each cinematic, but they're certainly not cinema. So why would a major film festival like Sundance take any interest in them? And how can filmmakers use VR to tell stories and reach new audiences? In today's episode, I speak with four people who can help answer these questions. The same four, in fact, who helped create the fascinating projects I described above, which premiered in the VR Palace at Sundance 2017. My guests are Lily Baldwin of Through You, Rose Trochet of If Not Love, and Yasmin Eliott and Ellie Zananiri of 0 Days VR. I sat down with them immediately after experiencing their projects, and as you'll hear, I was pretty blown away. I think you will be too when you listen to our very brainy conversation about how they brought these groundbreaking stories to life and which filmmaking rules they had to throw out the window to do so. Well, I will say that I just came from seeing all your work. I'm blown away and also like a little, I'm like in awe and in shock, and I'm sure you are as well. So we'll start with that. But I think filmmakers always have a hard time with their log lines, and then it feels like 20 times harder because we don't necessarily have the language to describe VR, but I'm going to ask you to try. So start by telling me your name and your project and give a little description. Why don't we start with Yasmin?
Hi, my name is Yasmin Eliott. I'm the director of 0 Days VR, and 0 Days is a documentary about the Stuxnet virus and about cyber warfare in general, and specifically about the 2000 attacks on Iranian nuclear facilities. And it's a game engine and volumetric filmmaking project.
Wowie, which I really want to experience. My name is Rose Trochet, and my piece is called If Not Love, and it's a sort of a contemplation of violence that might not have to happen.
So that's, I'm going to stop before we keep going around and say it's such a beautiful description of what the content of the project is, but imagine folks are listening to this on a podcast and have no idea what this might even mean. So maybe just quickly walk someone through, like, what does it mean that you come and you sit in this chair?
Yeah, you come and you sit in the chair and you sort of are immediately put into a sex scene. And you come to find out that the sex scene sort of happened in the past, and then you're kind of are put into the current time. And it's a man, the same man, and he's heading to a club, and it's about a shooting at a club. And then it's really kind of, I had this thought about imagining if there could possibly be a moment prior to deciding to plan and carry out a violent act that could shift that could stop that from happening, or that tangential moment where you can follow a different path. And that's what the piece contemplates. So it's sort of told in forward, and then a moment happens again, and it's sort of told in reverse.
So Lily, tell us about your project and also the experience of doing your project.
My name is Lily Baldwin, and I am here with Through You. I am a co-director with Sashka Unseld in that project. This is my first VR project. Pretty thrilled to be here at Sundance with that. It is, Through You is a never-ending love story told through time, and it uses bodies, not words, dance, gesture, bold color, sonics, music, environment to kind of propel you through different key points of intimacy and loss, and tracks essentially this woman, Julia, who's your lover in the beginning, if there is a beginning. But side note, the piece plays infinitely. So it's a never-ending trajectory of one cycle that you can step in and out of. So our installation currently is that it's just headsets playing inside of our velvet booth, then you can choose to step in and out of time as you wish. So for us, that was very important to kind of have not only just an experience inside of the headset, but set up, sort of create some stakes and kind of a ritual around entering this weird thing you tether to your head and are asked to launch through this very uncomfortable experience into another space. So stepping back into the narrative that you were with Julia, and she essentially, you are her lover, and she leaves you, and then you watch her as a silent witness or memory, and that's something that Sashka has really brought to the table, is this idea of memory through time as she grows older, and then eventually is 92 years old, confronts you, and essentially sets herself free from memory and the world that she knew it. So it's this really kind of high impact, high velocity, visceral, sexy, scary experience that ultimately is a long poem.
Wow.
And I'm Ellie Zananiri. I worked with Yasmin Elayat on Zero Days VR. I'm the technology director on that piece. And just to tell you more about the experience, Zero Days VR is based off of Zero Days, the feature length documentary. And what we tried to do with it was really use virtual reality as a way to put you into places where you would not be able to go regularly and really like embody the experience. So you get to experience what it's like inside of a computer, following a computer virus going through it. You get to go inside the Natanz nuclear facility in Iran and seeing how this virus affected the centrifuges there. You get to go to an NSA office and listen to an informant tell you exactly like who was behind the piece and that sort of thing. So really, a big piece of the experience was trying to like get you to this alternate reality that's a different way of explaining the facts.
Our listeners and readers are primarily filmmakers, and every time I put up a VR post, which I do frequently, I get a lot of pushback, like, that's not filmmaking, or whatever it is. And so I guess the first question's a little bit provocative. I'm wondering, why bother? Why did you bother telling a story in this way that takes so much extra time and tech and everything?
For me, as someone who's always felt outside of the box in terms of wanting to fracture time, narratively, VR is sort of the ultimate playground, and it's a place where I can mess up and not know anything. And as long as I work really hard at not knowing, then suddenly I know something. You know, it's sort of like it's a dream for me as a maker to just, you know, really mess around. But also for me, mortality and bodies, and what does it mean? I feel like what can exist in VR that can't exist in film? And it's not just an adaptation. So for me, it was about kind of taking the space that was about permission and just throwing things into the wind. And with Sashka really at the helm of that, saying, you know, I didn't know much. And he was just like, hey, what are your ideas? And I'm like, well, can we try this? He's like, yeah. So I didn't know what couldn't be done. So at the helm of not saying no, that's where he was, you know, so then I felt like my ideas were welcomed, and that was really interesting. But what cannot exist in film, that's where we exist.
I think one of the first things that they're right, it's not filmmaking, it's VR making. And I know that we don't know that as well. So it might not be as sexy, but it needs to be given its own space to be the thing that it is, which is a different medium than filmmaking. And because we don't have language around it right now, we kind of fall back on film language, like, you know, the cuts, and let's cut there, and let's like pan across, you know, or let's dolly or whatever. You know, we're using the same terms, and it's a little bit of a trap because it really needs to be seen as something different. And I think that you can tell stories in, there are things I don't think If Not Love I would have ever made as a 2D short film. I think it's the impact of the immersion that the medium provides that allows you this kind of more intimate and more, for lack of a better word, rapid affiliation with it. You don't need the hour and a half, you know, really. I mean, there's going to be more long form, and that's great. But I think that there are such gems that are, I'm such a fan of short work and short stories, both written and visual. And for me, there's just such an amazing impact that you can have in a short period of time. And you know, and I think everybody needs to approach it differently. I think it's wrong to, you know, like Lily and Sashka wrote this to VR. It's not, VR is not a platform that you take an old script that you had and go like, oh, let me do it in VR. You know, I think it needs to, you need to make and think, and if you're writing, write to it, or if you're experimenting, experiment to what the form is.
Yeah, and I would think I would add to what Rose said, like it's not, you have access to different like ways of communicating with people in VR, which is what's interesting. So you can use peripheral vision, for example, or you can use like spatial audio, and you can have people look around, and there's really much more to explore. That's what then what's in front of you. It's not just about having a focal point in the frame, but really about like creating a whole environment and having people like just live inside this environment instead of just looking at it, which is what I find interesting with VR.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, just a little bit of a background. I actually come from a non-film background. I design experiences and story-driven experiences, whether they're participatory in the street traveling projects or installations. And so for me, something like creating an experience in virtual reality is almost like the next stage. It has the same type of challenges and same types of problems that I think are exciting about experimenting with how do you make people. Make people uncomfortable in different ways with different tools at disposal. And I think for me, this is a project that actually is a script that is based on a feature documentary by Alex Gibney, and we had the task of adapting it for VR. And it's already as a feature, it's a beautiful documentary. But for us, we wanted to see, well, how can we Alex Gibney actually poses a question in the film, which is how do you tell a story where the lead character is code? And for us, it was like, well, actually, we think that this could be the perfect medium. And where we can extend the film, and kind of push some of the boundaries and kind of be a little, our worlds are kind of bleeding into each other. This is a story about how the digital world and the physical worlds are kind of interconnected, but also invading each other. And the boundaries less and less defined. And that was the, VR was a perfect place to experiment and kind of create these worlds and communicate that.
For me, like thinking, listening, it's really about culpability. And it's something I can't do in 2D space, and I love it. And not only are we culpable, we're implicated and we're responsible, and those two tools, and we can be invisible and we're included. So it's like, if we just look like the basic of that, that sort of the premise of those limitations and vast possibilities, that for me is why I want to keep exploring VR. And obviously having a body is a part of that.
It's funny you said that, because of course our listeners haven't seen these projects yet, but that feeling is exactly how I felt at the end of Ellie and Yasmin's project, a feeling of culpability or responsibility. So it works. And also that quote, that question, how do you tell a story where the lead character is code, might be the most beautifully geeky thing I've ever heard. And piggybacking off of what you all said, I imagine that some conventions from filmmaking are useful and some you have to throw out the window. So could you speak to that a little? Were there any things that from film backgrounds or from your experiential storytelling backgrounds that were useful in designing VR and some that were like, I got to cut the cord with this one?
I think I have the longest career here in traditional film and television and media making. And for me, I think the biggest thing that I bring to it is working with actors and directing actors, and that kind of, and it's a whole different, it's actually such a wonderful and richer experience than traditional making, because you really are working out longer parts with them. It's much more collaborative than I have worked in traditional filmmaking. So that's kind of been really great. And I tend to work with actors who don't have big long resumes, because it's a different thing for them. You know, it's a different experience. And even the script is flexible in terms of what it is we're figuring out together, and that's for me one of the biggest things. And the other stuff I try to let go of, because I don't want to limit what the making is in this, or the possibilities of VR making.
So that's interesting. Is there more improvisation in VR?
There's a certain letting go that you have to do with VR, or you can do. I know that like there is a you're kind of back out of the room again. The way that I work, we just kind of stuck a little Samsung on top and I was watching from a different room. Or you can do like what you and Sashka did, which was like put on black suits and crawl on the floor and You have to let it be with the actors. You have to trust that you've, and in that way we rehearse it more and more, you know, and really, really work on the physicality of the piece itself is worked on more than when I'm doing like a scene and I know that I can cut it, I'm going to cut here and then we go to the next thing and it's this sort of truncated experience.
We worked in a new way. Again, this being my first VR, you know, I'm sort of stepping in right off the cliff. We wanted to move the camera as much as possible to create a very specific relationship with our subject. Intimacy, sort of the primary goal. And so we talked a lot about sort of the camera breathing with the performer and what is that. And so we did a lot of tests, Sashka and me, where I was dancing and he was holding a camera and... Well, he was sort of, I felt like he was dancing and I was dancing and there was a camera between us. Or he was standing and I was responding to it. And really kind of this interesting conversation between ourselves as people with the camera there. So we wanted to recreate that somehow here. So we knew we wanted to move the camera. We covered the floors in with black kind of felted floor. We wore black suits head to toe along with our amazing DP, Dahmer Weaver Madsen. And I rehearsed with the dancers before, always wish I had more time, but then kind of had built a vocabulary and then worked with them on set and kind of directed them through an experience. So we knew what, we had context, we had scene set up, and then it was sort of me there belting, coaxing, listening, responding to that environment, kind of doing the inchworm on the ground. And it was bizarre. We did 20 to 40 minute takes, and then literally Sashka and I cut into the footage afterwards and got the juice, figured out how to make those, and then I would kind of come in, and I love like it, cutting minutia of cut to cut, and so I would kind of come in and fuse those together, and then he was really good at kind of overarching narrative. And so the two, we just kind of went back and forth on each other. But that's how our set was different. But there was a lot of human, raw, performance, real elements that we wanted to capture.
Ours is going to be a little strange. Our project, so Zero Days, actually we should mention we're part of Scatter. Ellie's a technical director, I'm the creative director at Scatter. And we're an immersive media studio. And the way we approach VR is we have kind of a technique we call volumetric filmmaking, which is really capturing real people volumetrically, but putting them into game engine environments and immersive environments that we create, whether it's through photogrammetry or we create our generative systems. And so in Zero Days VR, it's game engine, real-time, live, and Ellie can speak to that. That was a whole new ball game. I'm not a game designer, and also working with, so we have actually real people and telling, you know, one of our characters, the informant, is a real person who's volumetrically captured, but then she goes through a whole visual and aesthetic range in this system. And our main character, Stuxnet, is written in code and is a generative system, plus our worlds that look like Natanz. And so we blended kind of it's a hybrid approach. I don't know what to call it, really. We call it volumetric filmmaking, but I don't know if, Ellie, if you want to jump in a little bit about that.
Sure. I think one thing that's interesting, is on the same vein of improvisation, is that because we use code a lot, what we like to do is kind of write programs that are emergent, that have emergent behavior. So every time you run it, it might not do the exact same thing. But what's interesting when you use a game engine to create a VR experience like that is that your film can look different every single time you watch it. And it can kind of have a life of its own. So you just set the rules and then let it run and it'll just do what it does. And you can even use the audience feedback as part of input for that. So depending on what the viewer is doing, you can change what they're seeing. And I think that's one thing about VR that's really exciting and you can't really do in film.
I have covered some of Scatter's work before and been following its predecessor for a long time, and even I don't totally understand what you're talking about, and so I'm sure I'm not alone. Is there any more layman's terms way you can describe volumetric filmmaking?
Our partners, who aren't on here, but so Alexander Porter and James George, our partners at Scatter, had created this tool that's called DepthKit. Scatter and DepthKit are now sister companies, but DepthKit has become a product that anyone can use, and it's essentially a combination of any camera and any off-the-shelf depth sensor, like a Kinect or an Intel RealSense, which we're using here at Sundance in our installation. And what it does is you use the depth data with the, you know, high fidelity fidelity of the your camera to create depth and to your characters. So you can actually 3D capture, 3D scan people as they are and put them at real people into your any kind of game engine environment. So you can have 6 degrees of freedom and create an experience, but with real people. So instead of modeled rigs or you know animatronics or something like that. I don't know if that's a good explanation.
Can I just ask a question? Because I kind of know, like, you know, about this and have been sort of like, oh, I don't know about capturing someone and placing them somewhere where you can walk around someone, you know, that's photo.
Photogrammetry.
Yeah, thank you. And so for me, my question would be, I'm going to put them in a room, I'm going to capture them. So I have all of my cameras to capture them in 3D, right? And I'm photographing them. Are they going through the movements in the room as you would in a green screen situation?
Yeah, so the difference, what you're describing is like a mocap system or you know, some of the other rigs. So the way actually DeathKit works is like you can set up anywhere and it would be, there's different systems. You can use one camera, you can, with you know, handheld, or you can do four cameras and to create a 360 capture. But it would be essentially that, so I don't know if you've seen Giant, for example, last year, that was captured with DeathKit as well, the characters, that family. And hopefully you'll get to see the Zero Days character or our next project, Blackout, also, which is 360 people on a New York subway. But it would be, the difference would be, it is another way that's cheaper and more accessible than having a whole system with all these cameras. Yeah. It's essentially off-the-shelf hardware, and you can use your own camera equipment.
Yeah.
This episode and all of our Sundance coverage is brought to you by Rode Microphones, 100% Australian-owned and made professional microphones for studio and broadcast, and My Rode Reel, the world's largest short film competition. Now in its fourth year running, with over $500,000 in prizes given away so far, My Rode Reel is back, bigger and better in 2017. More films, new judges, and more prizes. To view past winners and register for 2017, head to myrodereel.com and sign up now. So I'm going to steer us back to the rule breaking. Actually, you, Yasmin and Ellie kind of planted this seed to me when I was looking at their project. But, you know, I was thinking about the rules being broken from filmmaking, but there also are already conventions of VR that you may or may not find working for you. So can you talk about you're sticking to or leaving some of the VR rules in your projects?
Sure. I think one main thing is a lot of people are afraid that the viewers will have motion sickness. So when we started this project, everybody that had more experience with VR was saying, okay, the camera has to be still. If it does move, it has to always move at a constant speed. That's not too fast, not too slow. No cuts, no phase, like none of that. Like basically everybody was saying, like you just stick somebody in an environment, they do whatever for 5 minutes, and then you cut and you're done. And that didn't seem very interesting to us. So we did a lot of tests, like where we would, like, you know, do a lot of camera moves and see what happened, what worked and what didn't. And there's definitely like some situations where you can get people sick because they really feel it. They feel physical reactions to getting moved through space when they virtually. And what we tried to do is to use that to our advantage. So when we did want people to feel uneasy in the piece, we would like put in some camera moves that would make you feel uneasy, and that would add to the experience. It wasn't just like audio and visual, but it was also like visceral. And I think what was interesting here is that we tried to use that to our advantage without overdoing it, so keeping it kind of subtle.
I did in my first piece, The Party, which was just 220, you go through the experience as a sexual assault piece, and you go through the experience as him, and then you go through the experience as her, and she's drunk. So we really wanted to do that. I mean, we push people to the edge of being like, you know, that kind of like wanting someone to physically represent where this girl's at. Like she's about to pass out or throw up, you know, like it's one of those two things. And so that was like that expressive camera. And I've never done a piece, even when I started, I've never done a piece without moving, you know, like I guess I've seen a lot of pieces that there are some beautiful static pieces, but to me, I think, you know, the camera movement and sort of trying to define that in this space and relationship of character to camera has been something that I've been exploring. And If Not Love is the first piece that I've edited, that I've really not done the fade down, not done the blacks that go in between. And, you know, and that was also because of the difference of the use of camera. The perspective series is always in first person. So it's very difficult to cut out of your body. Right. You know, you have to cut out of your body to an exterior space that has a relationship to where that body was. So it was tougher with that conceit, you know, to do that. So then I've just been sort of trying to progress what narrative in VR making, you know, looks like. And I love that, because every year we were just like, they're like, if you cut in this medium, you're going to go nuts. The viewer will go nuts. It was a whole thing. Like these people who study brain, it'll change your brain. And then
go nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll like, there's something like I met with someone who was a brain scientist, who was just like, you're doing work in this. And then it went to, you know, okay, you can cut, but you have to make it ease the person in through the cut. And anyway, so it's really wonderful to be at the point now where, you know, everyone's just.
Yeah, we have over 272 cuts in ours, and it's 14 minutes. So we wanted to do something extreme and test the limit and move the camera and cut it. It's not just moving, it's moving and cutting. But I spend a lot of time, I do a lot of cutting on action in my pieces and with movement, and it's this whole kind of, when I edit my stuff, it's this whole kind of physical choice making around, oh, when the limb, when the pinky comes forward, and then, you know, we follow that, and then we can cut to his pinky in the next shot, and I kind of track bodies as a cutting tool. Just, I've always done that. So me and Sashka just sort of shacked up for 2 weeks straight and just tried all of these options of ways of cutting and seeing how we could propel narrative with that without losing the audience. It's not just moving. It's like, and then there's that whole kind of the, you know, the nose, I'm actually not aware of what it's called, but then the sort of fixed focal point concept of the nose that people wear. And, you know, for me, I don't ever look at what people look at usually too. Like I'll be the person staring at the, you know, the nubby sweater in the corner and not looking at the glittery star. And, you know, it's so following the, like tracking the fix, I would just never do that. So I was trying to, So anticipating cutting, knowing where people were going to look too. So I often use body, and it was a very different way, kind of oblique way of coming into this. If you follow me, I just kind of,
method.
I just took a little leap there in my head. I think I need a nap, but yeah. Are you guys with my nubby sweaters and sparkly stars? Okay. Which do you look at though? That's going to tell me everything about you.
Wow, fascinating. So we don't actually have a ton more time. I do have a ton more questions, but it's a nice segue to you guys are all, I mean, the name of the platform here at Sundance is New Frontier, and you're sort of expected to be doing something new, and you are pushing envelopes and you're breaking conventions. So a more sort of philosophical question is, how do you prepare yourself to do that? How do you take the space to get away from what you're used to or what other people have done and do something new?
I would say that I think a big driving force, and I feel lucky that I work in creative technology and different types of mediums, but for me it's always about trying to chase those stories or find those stories that really can't be told in any other way, and then finding ways to support that story using the different types of tools or different types of technology. And I feel like that intersection is where these exciting types of projects happen. And so something for like 0 Days, it was the perfect convergence of the form and the story. Like it was, it's the perfect story for VR, and not necessarily that it has to always be VR for the next project. And I would say that's sort of my approach. It's like, what is the best service of this type of story, and what is the best way to tell it that is in a new way, essentially.
Yeah, I feel like not every story has to be told in VR. And I think that's you have to kind of, you know, really assess why it is you're making it in that form. Also, why it is you're doing 360 rather than 220. Like, you know, I see some pieces and I'm like, this would make a great 220. And you'd have so much more flexibility in shooting, and you know, so much more like kind of, you know, for those of us who want to be close to the action and close to the actors, and you know, like, you know, so I think that those are things that as we get more sophisticated, we won't, you know, once the sort of the novelty of the full 360 kind of wears, we'll really start exploring, like, what does this need to be? You know, does it, and you know, what scope and what, you know, scale.
Yeah, I guess, you know, for me, doing something new, obviously, that sort of that isn't sort of what I start with. But for me, it's about listening to, seeing where there's space to play. And when there's not a lot of rules, or when there's rules that are being begged to be broken. Otherwise, I really personally struggle as a maker to figure out, understand how to fit inside of things.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. What I mean is I've been trying to work on kind of linear narrative stuff for a long time, and it's not what naturally comes out of me. So I have a feature glass that I'm working on, and that I've actually been working with Rose on, and trying to get this feature to read. And so just that kind of traditional, and you know, now we're out and we're making it and it's happening, but it's sort of like how to fit the way I think of sort of these slices of moments is sort of how I experience time and things, just me personally. So letting go of needing to fit into that and trusting how I naturally see often leaves me in a place where there's less codification. Does that make sense?
I have to just say that I very much agree with you. And I think that that's another quotable, which is that it's a place where there are no rules yet. And so you don't, that's why it sort of pains me a little bit that we're trying to shove it into a cinematic model, because it's like the world is your oyster in this, you know? And what excites me about what you guys are doing is that you're really taking that, like all of you guys, like, are really taking that ball and running with it. You know what I mean? And that's like extremely cool.
I was sort of asking in a more philosophical way, how do you prepare yourself to get outside the box? How do you forget about convention and sort of create space in your own mind? But we got into the nuts and bolts of like doing something new. So answer either one.
Okay. I guess, yeah, I mean, I think my thing is just I get bored easily. So I will try something for a bit. And then as soon as I'm familiar with it, I kind of want to try to push the boundaries a little more. And the way I usually do that is I'll try to collaborate. I'll find people to work with that I have like not too much in common with, or that we have like complementing qualities, and then we just try to like find a common ground together. And I think that's how like these weird ideas come out, and these weird experiments come out. And so that's just how I like to work. So I guess that's where the new frontier thing comes in.
Can I mention Ellie and I jumped into this project for the first week together, the first time ever working together? We've never worked together before. So this was a new collaboration and very fresh.
Yeah, I have to say that's the really cool thing about it. Like a lot of times when you're doing traditional filmmaking or feature making or whatever, you're alone and you're writing it, then you're prepping it, and then your crew starts to come in and you're the boss of it. And this form, unless you know how to do it all, which very few people do, you're in a position of collaborating, and that's like where all the ideas start to come out, right? Like I'm collaborating with someone who threw out like three different things last night, and I'm like, oh my God, let me take that, let me write to that, let me create an idea around that, you know? And that is what's really, that's really cool.
VR forces collaboration, and it forces collaboration with people you might never have thought to work with, programmers and filmmakers, you know, coders and DPs, whatever it is. It's very cool.
Just to quickly, Liz, I thought that was a great question. How do I personally, emotionally prepare myself? I mean, I don't always think I'm great, and
I always think you're great.
But like, it's about being with people that I can be wrong in front of, and that I can trust, and the people that can tell me when to stop. Those are all kind of elements for me, sort of to create a fertile environment for something to happen. So, and then with that, there's less judgment. And I think when there's less judgment, there's more can come out. I, the only thing that needs to come in with that place of exploration is rigor. And that's something that's very important to me. It's a real diligence to the form and the material you have, and to use it, flesh it, build it, break it, and sort of massage it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Great. So we'll do one last question, sort of looking forward. So now all the big companies are getting on the VR board and making stuff and whatever. So what do you guys think is the future of independent VR making?
I think that's a really good question, because having done traditional making for such a long time, this is very reliant upon a viewer. Or, for example, or this piece of software or hardware, and that relationship, I struggle with a little bit. You know, that suddenly there's a level, potentially a level of censorship that happens from the person who's giving you the thing that you have to view something through, and that used to never be there. You used to make a film, especially indie, and you said specifically indie. You used to make a film, you know, and someone either wants to buy it or they don't want to buy it, you know. But, you know, we weren't put in this position of like, hey, you know what, that's not going to be good for my brand. So suddenly the brand is leading, and that is very worrisome to me.
I think, yeah, I'm optimistic that, like, I agree with you that at this point, like, there's a lot of control from the technology companies that create the hardware and that create the platforms to distribute them on. But I'm looking a lot to indie gaming as a model. And, like, you know, the games was the same thing. Like, you needed to have this system to play this game, and it needed to be distributed through here. And over the past few years, like, this new model came out where, like, people are making games that there's platforms that exist that can let you develop games in one, I guess, in one environment, and you can deploy on many different platforms. And that means that you can create something that many more people can see. You're not really restricted to a specific platform. So my hope, and which I think will happen, is that this is going to happen with VR as well. It's just going to be generalized. There's going to be some open tools to just allow anybody, whether they have a phone or like a crazy PC or just, I don't know, something else, like just a projector and some weird device can just watch your piece.
Yeah, I think just to add on to what Ellie's saying, I think I'm also very optimistic, but I think a lot of Scatter's future is based on this optimism, but it's this idea of this emerging market that hopefully we can kind of create an ecosystem where we can create new types of distribution channels straight to different audiences and hopefully different reach. And that's, I think, the kind of future that I'm hoping for and that I'm excited about. And I hope we'll also sustain this type of work. You know, we had a very tiny team working. We are a very small team. And I'm very optimistic about that type of future.
Well, thank you all so much. This was fascinating. And congratulations again on your projects.
Thank you. Thanks, Liz. We're a fan.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you for listening. You can hear lots of other fascinating conversations on the art of filmmaking and virtual reality by finding the No Film School podcast on iTunes, and of course, by visiting us at nofilmschool.com. Don't miss our Indie Film Weekly news show, which comes out every Thursday morning and catches you up on everything you might have missed when you were busy making films. You can reach me on Twitter at LizFilm, and we are on Twitter at No Film School. See you on Thursday.